This is Marathon Training Academy, episode 231.
This podcast is brought to you by Bedgear. Bedgear Performance Bedding uses heat deflecting, moisture wicking, and airflow technologies to get you sleeping deep so that you wake up ready to perform at your peak. I've been sleeping on a Bedgear pillow every night and love it. You can start building your personalized Bedgear sleep system today. Head over to bedgear.com. Use the code MARATHON20 to get 20% off until December 31st. That's bedgear.com and use the code MARATHON20.
This podcast is also brought to you by Virtue Labs. Virtue Labs is a new hair care brand with the goal of giving everyone the best hair scientifically possible via an incredible new protein, alpha keratin 60KU. Alpha keratin 60KU is identical to the keratin in your own hair and has the power to resurface and fill in cracks from damage, meaning more bounce, more shine, and more life for your hair. Listeners can now try Virtue at 10% off and get free shipping with the code MTA. Visit virtuelabs.com to place your order.
Welcome to the Marathon Training Academy podcast, where it's all about empowering you to conquer the marathon and go the distance. I'm Trevor.
And I'm Angie.
In this episode, we want to inspire you to do the hard thing. We talk with Rob Jones, a wounded Marine Corps veteran and double amputee who just ran 31 marathons in 31 days. Plus, I'll share my experience completing the Spartan Beast obstacle race in South Carolina. And last but not least, Angie will tell you about some of the toughest races in the world, which will change your definition of the word hard. And of course, to get expert support and training for your upcoming running challenges, you can learn about Academy membership, our coaches, and our awesome online community when you visit MarathonTrainingAcademy.com. All right, Angie, we got a lot to get to in this episode, so I think we'll just jump right in. We've got a little bit of roundup here of shout-outs we want to give to people who are completing races and just want to give them a virtual high five here.
Yeah, that's right. We have several Academy members who have recently finished their first marathons, which we always love. So we'd like to say congratulations to Jen, who ran the Richmond Marathon. Also, congratulations to Heidi and her partner, who ran the Richmond Marathon. Cindy also did the Richmond Marathon, and she got a new PR of 34 minutes. And she says, better and better for this old girl. And of course, we don't think she's old, but she was pretty excited about that PR.
Running will keep you young.
Yes, exactly. Also, congratulations to Jen, who says, so I do have what it takes. I can't believe I just ran my first marathon. I did 26.5 miles with the Route 66 Center of the Universe detour. I didn't beat Oprah, but I finished in just over 4:41, which beat my goal to do the whole shortest ultra in under 4:45. Thanks to Angie and Trevor for making me believe in myself.
Well, congrats, Jen, on finishing your first marathon and even going that extra 0.3 at the world's shortest ultra, scare quotes, at the Route 66 marathon. We did that one a couple years ago.
Yes, I think it was more than a couple, but more like five.
Yeah.
They put on a great marathon there and half marathon, so highly recommended. Congratulations to Paula. She says, I ran my first marathon yesterday and I still cannot even contain my excitement. I posted a while back about how my first 16-miler did not go so well, but I was able to learn from it and turn it around, finish my training cycle strong, and run my first marathon without a hitch. Yes, it was hard. Yes, I was tired. Yes, I couldn't believe I was only halfway at mile 13. Hmm. But it was seriously the most amazing experience I've had to date. I couldn't believe the pictures my mom took because I was actually smiling after running 26.2. My wonderful MTA coach Dominique helped me so much with my race strategy. Running has given me so much, and I'm thankful for the MTA community that is such a positive source of energy and encouragement. I can't wait to do it again.
Well, that is great, and that's exactly what we love to hear is, you know, she finished strong with a smile on her face and eager to do it again because, you know, that's what we're all about is helping people become lifelong runners. So huge congrats, Paula, on completing your first marathon.
This note comes from James. He says, I started running at age 60, and I just ran my second Chickamauga Marathon yesterday at the age of 64. I am as slow as Christmas, but I managed to finish injury-free thanks to what I've learned from you. Two things that really helped. Number one, I carried 26 gratitudes with me and gave thanks, one per mile. You guys were mile 25. Turns out you were right. I do have what it takes, and my life has been changed. Thanks again for giving the gift of yourself so personally.
Well, thank you for that nice note, James, and for thinking of us at mile 25 at the Chickamauga Marathon in Georgia. I think it's a really good practice, you know, to be intentional and carry along 26 things to be grateful for and kind of reflect on each at every mile. We've heard of other people doing that. That's pretty smart.
Yeah, that's right. The more you can keep your mind focused on gratitude, it takes some of the pressure, some of the burden off of the hard experience of going the whole distance. So,
and if you tell people ahead of time that you're going to be dedicating a mile to them, you're probably even more likely to get to that mile.
That's right. You can't let them down. This next note is from Jason. He says, I just completed my third marathon and the MTA virtual half at the Soldier Marathon. It was an exhilarating experience as I shaved 20 plus minutes off to get a PR. This is thanks in part to the tips I've been hearing in the MTA podcast and as a new Academy member. I listened to the race day tips on my way to the race, mentally helping me to release the Kraken.
Yes.
And it was awesome to carry the American flag across the finish at the National Infantry Museum, honoring our soldiers and veterans.
The American what, Angie?
Ha, flag.
Thank you so much for that nice note. Jason, congrats on finishing your third marathon and also the MTA virtual half. Glad you got to release the Kraken and also gave Angie another opportunity to say flag on the podcast. This is a callback to our last episode where Angie was talking about putting an RX bar in her bag. And I kind of took a moment to ask her.
To mock me.
So then we got an email from Christopher Shank, who I guess has a similar sense of humor to me. He says, here's a question for Angie to read out loud. Have you ever been running a race, began to lag, had to throw in the white flag and get on the sag wagon?
Uh-huh.
So anyway, all right.
You two are pretty funny.
Enough. I won't make fun of you anymore for it, Angie.
I'm sure you will.
So what else do you got for us?
Well, we've got a couple great emails, which I think really illustrate what we're going to be talking about on this episode about how to reframe challenges and do the hard thing. This first one is from Michelle. She says, hi, Angie and Trevor. I'm a relatively new listener and live in San Francisco. 5 years ago, I was hit by a truck as I was crossing the street. My journey to return to health has been long, but in some ways, that accident was one of the best things that ever happened to me. It helped me to understand in a profound way how important our health is in order to live an enjoyable life. Somewhere along that journey, I got it into my head that I want to try a half marathon. I searched for a podcast on running tips and motivation, found yours, and it became my favorite right away. I wanted to suggest the book Running with the Mind of Meditation as a recommended read. The idea to recommend it came to mind during a couple of your shows, particularly in the Munich Marathon recap, where Trevor mentioned the emotional feelings he experienced during that race. Thanks to both of you again for all the good work you're doing. Warmly, Michelle.
Well, thank you for that note, Michelle, and sharing your story. And, you know, I'm especially impressed by that sentence where she said getting hit by the truck in some ways was one of the best things that ever happened to her. That's pretty incredible.
Yeah, it's really amazing perspective and sounds like a very good book that she was recommending there.
Yeah, once again, we haven't read the book, but it's called Running with the Mind of Meditation. So thanks for the recommend there, Michelle.
That's right. And this next email comes from Rob. He says, dear Angie and Trevor, I recently finished my sixth road marathon, the Columbia Gorge Marathon in Oregon, and it was probably the happiest and proudest I've ever felt crossing a finish line in my 6.5 years as a runner. My summer was a disaster race-wise due to wildfires that canceled one event, extreme dehydration at another event, and dropping another race. So this marathon was a last-minute addition to my calendar. And the beautiful silver lining here is that despite the course laying waste to everyone, for the first time ever, I finished a marathon without my legs being a horrendous cramping mess because I learned from my DNF in July to hydrate properly. Trevor, I have to thank you for the Munich race recap. That was some really moving stuff, and it was in my head a lot leading up to race day and again at the start line. My life circumstances over the last few years have been very challenging, and as a result, I've lost touch with a lot of the more emotional parts of myself. The solitude and chosen suffering of long-distance running helps me cope with the involuntary suffering I deal with on a day-to-day basis. But hearing the gratitude in your voice during that race really resonated with me, and it was something I anchored to as I prepared my mind for the challenge of race day. I don't care how far I can run these days, a marathon is a challenge. At the end of the day, it wasn't about the time or the medal. This race was just about me mindfully respecting myself and my journey, and it became a reminder that we still get to choose a better way forward despite whatever has come before.
Wow, these emails are awesome, Angie. Where'd you find these?
Well, we've got some amazing people out in our audience. That's all I can say.
Yeah, thank you for that perspective, Rob. And, you know, I'm not quite sure what he deals with. He talks about involuntary suffering versus chosen suffering. And that's the great thing about a marathon is suffering that you get to choose and sort of relativizes other suffering that we could go through in our life. And really, if we get used to pushing ourselves outside our comfort zone, it seems like at that point we could stay more centered when unexpected things happen in life.
Exactly.
So thank you for the nice email, Rob. Congrats on getting through that tough race, and thanks for being a listener to the podcast. Well on my way, well on my way. So I recently ran the Spartan Beast in Spartanburg, South Carolina. I should say it's a Spartan Beast. They're happening all over the world. I really had no intentions of running a Spartan race ever. But we had Joe DeSena, the Spartan Race founder, on the podcast back in July. And he really threw down the gauntlet and gave me some free race entries. So I took him up on the offer. So glad I did. I've really enjoyed running three Spartan races now. The first race I did was in Palmerton, PA, which really kicked my butt. That was a Spartan Super. But I had a great time and decided to earn my Spartan Trifecta, which means if you complete each Spartan distance, sprint, super, and beast in one calendar year, you get like three pieces of a medal that all come together and give you special powers.
And starting in July, you already had half the year gone, so you kind of had to get with it.
Yeah, so I did my Spartan Super, which is the middle distance, 8 miles in July. I did a Spartan Sprint in August in Colorado with a buddy. That's the shortest distance, is 4 miles. And then I did a Spartan Beast, which is about 12 to 13 miles in November. So to get to Spartanburg, South Carolina, I had to drive about 8 hours from where we live. Which, by the way, is that a perfect name for a place to have a Spartan race or what?
Yeah.
I checked into my hotel and immediately I started seeing people just covered in dirt that were coming in from the race that day.
Wow.
Because it's a 2-day event. Angie, I was trying to gauge, you know, how tough the race would be by how dirty people looked.
So you had scared yourself in advance?
What I really don't like is cold water plunges. So I was looking, you know, how wet are these people? So anyway, it actually didn't look too bad. And I talked to one lady on the elevator and I said, was there any cold water plunge? And she's like, no. I don't know what race she did.
Maybe she has a different definition of cold water than you do.
I guess. So the race was actually at the University of South Carolina Spartanburg campus, which is pretty expansive, and there's lots of wooded acres to run through. In that part of the country, there's all kinds of like gnarly, thorny vines that grow along the ground and get caught in your socks. And I was in the last open heat of the day, since I love late starts, Angie. I got to start at like 10 in the morning. And the way that you climb into your starting corral is you have to scale like a little 4-foot wall. So pretty much if you can't get over that wall, you're not going to have any luck with the rest of it. There's always this pre-race motivational speech to get you fired up, but it's some guy and he's got a great booming voice and he says, will you choose glory on this day? Who am I? And he says, who am I? And we all have to shout out, I am a Spartan. Angie was bracing herself. She thought I was going
to
shout it.
I was leaning back to protect my sensitive ears.
You guys want to hear me shout it?
No.
I'm going to move to the back of the room, okay? Angie, you say, who am I? And I'll say, I am a Spartan. Okay, I'm at the back of the room. Go ahead, Angie.
I'm not a drill instructor with a deep voice, sorry.
Well, the guy says, who am I? And then we say, I am a Spartan!
This is madness!
Madness.
This is Sparta!
I'm sure everyone's inspired now.
We have to say it like 5 times. And interestingly, it was the same race announcer at every race.
Wow.
I recognized the guy. Pennsylvania, Colorado, South Carolina. It was the same dude. So we kicked the race off. We started running. And then at mile 2, out of like 12.8 miles, at mile 2, we had to go through the mud. There's these muddy trenches they dug. And you have to like pretty much slide down the bank and wade through muddy water. And in the final trench, there was a wall you had to duck under, so it was pretty much guaranteed cold water mud plunge. And in South Carolina, at least in that part of South Carolina, there's like this red clay, I think they call it gumbo, that just gets all over it. It just, I was digging it out of my ears for days.
Your toenails are like orange.
Yeah. Yeah. It turned everything orange. My skin was orange. It was gnarly. I mean, there was no escaping it. Sometimes they're merciful and they'll put the water obstacle near the end so you don't have to run around wet all day. But no, not this time. So I had to do about 10 miles just covered in mud with rocks and grit in my shoes. Who's ready to sign up for a Spartan race? After we climbed out of the water, we had to army crawl under barbed wire through the mud and then rope climb over a slanted wall. And then we got to the spear throw obstacle, which I failed and had to do 30 burpees.
Bummer. It's a good thing we're not relying on you to hunt food for our family with a spear.
Some of the other obstacles that I recall involved crossing over the same creek again and again, scrambling up its muddy banks, doing things like carrying logs, buckets of rocks, sandbags, the rope climb, 5-foot walls, 7-foot walls, multi-rings, monkey bars, A-frame cargo nets, and the Tyrolean traverse, which is a rope that's stretched across from pole to pole. It's a pretty good distance, and you have to basically work your way across the rope using your arms and legs. You can't touch the ground, which I was able to do successfully, but got some pretty nasty rope burns.
I think you're going to have permanent souvenirs of that event. I think you took all the layers of your epidermis off.
I did. Yeah, it was bad. And then I had to like go through more mud and, you know, it just was kind of a recipe for infection.
Yeah.
But it was still worth it because I didn't have to do 30 burpees. So I was just happy because I tried to pass every obstacle. I only failed 2 out of like 37.
That's great.
And once I got to the end of the rope, you hit a bell, then you get to drop down. And I was picking my water bottle up and I heard a loud thud. This lady had dropped and fallen like straight on her back.
Oh.
And, you know, she's probably like 5 feet off the ground, 5 or 6 feet, and just let go. And she was not a small person and fell from that distance and boom, right on her back. But the staff came over immediately. There was always medical people on hand and they didn't really get too worked up. They just kind of walked over there and said, "Are you okay?"
No.
I think they've seen it happen plenty of times.
I'm sure.
Every obstacle always has a warning sign that says, you know, basically you do this at your own risk, just so you folks know.
We all sign our life away at any race.
So one great thing about doing a Spartan race is the sense of camaraderie that you get from your fellow racers as you're all pushing through and getting over obstacles together. So there's a sense of community that develops. And at one point, first of all, let me say this. I was pretty much passing everybody on the running part because it wasn't that hilly. It was pretty flat. So I was really able to make up time on the running sections. The running was the easy part.
So you think this was the most runnable of the 3 races that you did?
So far, yeah. It was just pretty nice trails, basically.
Cool.
And at one point, there was these ladies. They were probably, I don't know, 10 to 20 years older than me. And they were running together as a group, and they had like superhero costumes on, like Wonder Woman and other costumes. And I think that the leader saw me and this other dude run by, and they said, "Okay, ladies, let's get the move on now. Let's catch up to them. Let's catch up to his ass." And then they start running, and I hear them behind me, and they're like, "Follow that ass, ladies. Follow that ass."
They couldn't be talking about yours. Must have been the other guy.
Yeah, there's not much there to see, I'm afraid. So, yeah, you basically run around the woods, dirty and muddy, and cross creeks and climb over walls and carry 5-gallon buckets full of gravel and massive logs. And you do it for about 12.8 miles until you emerge at the end. There's a multi-ring obstacle to swing across, which I had no problem with. And then you climb over an A-frame and jump over burning logs, and you're done with the Spartan Beast.
Bragging rights.
They give you a medal, a banana, and a Cliff Bar. They really go all out.
What about water? You get that too?
You do get a bottle of water, yep. And they kind of look at you like, "What took you so long?"
Your finishing time, I was really expecting it to be much longer. So I was really impressed to hear how well you finished.
I think because it was so flat, you know, and I still had my marathon endurance from the Munich Marathon. Yeah, I actually finished in 3 hours and 20 minutes, 39 seconds. So I was happy. It actually took me longer to do the Spartan Super, which was 8 miles, than it did the Spartan Beast, which is 12.8.
So you've really increased your fitness, especially on the obstacles.
I need to practice the spear throw if I'm going to do this again. I did say if because you know, I don't have any hard, fast plans, but I'm sure I will. It is a lot of fun. You know, I am going to be a marathoner primarily, of course. And I do think marathons are harder than any Spartan race I've done so far, just because you're going so far and it's easy to get overwhelmed with just the sheer monotony mile after mile of a marathon. At a Spartan race, they keep things varied. You know, you're all the time having to deal with an obstacle or very technical terrain, so it occupies your mind a lot better. So yeah, I think that a marathon definitely wears one down mentally a lot faster. So I was able to finish my Spartan trifecta, which means each of the distances in one calendar year. And I thought maybe I'd just take a moment and share the most challenging aspects of each race really quick. Like I said, the South Carolina Spartan Beast was the first time I had to run just completely soaked and covered in mud. And having just grit and little tiny rocks in my socks and shoes, but not really having a way to clean it out. At the Spartan Sprint, which I did in Breckenridge, Colorado, it was only 4 miles, but it was at elevation. The air was thin. But the worst part of that race was wading through waist-deep, freezing, nut-shrinking, feet-throbbing cold water.
It's always about the cold water for you, isn't it?
Oh, it was bad. I mean, that was, to me, the most difficult obstacle I encountered of all my Spartan races, because I do hate cold water. It's just way outside of my comfort zone. And I suppose that if I keep pushing myself into cold water, taking cold showers, jumping in the cold ponds and lakes...
When do you do that?
Never. What I'm saying is, I suppose if I keep doing that, I will eventually build up more of an immunity to cold water plunges.
We've got a cold pond about 2 blocks from our house, so you can go practice.
I don't have any plans at this point.
I can push you in if you want.
By far, the toughest race was the Palmerton, Pennsylvania Spartan, the first one I did, which involved me going up a ski slope or down a ski slope for 8 miles. It took me over 4 hours to do 8 miles, and I've never been so sore in my life after doing that. Yeah, that is a meat grinder of a race, and other Spartans that I've talked to since then have said, oh yeah, Palmerton, PA, we've heard about that one. As a marathoner, I felt that my endurance held up very well. I was able to run all of the runnable sections of the course at the Spartan Beast. I really found that running was the easiest part. Like I said, I was passing people on the running part. I also found that my normal marathon fueling and hydrating worked well for this race. If you're a runner and you have all those things figured out, you're going to have a huge advantage over other folks there. And if you're thinking about doing a Spartan race, and I definitely think you should at least once, I'll give you a couple tips to work on as far as fitness-wise. Assuming that you are already a runner, since you listen to this podcast, you have that advantage. But what you're going to need to do is work on your rope climb technique, or you're going to fail that. You can't just rely on arm strength. I use the J-Wrap technique, which works great. You can Google it. Also, make sure you do a lot of pull-ups and get comfortable with just dead hanging on monkey bars. And do anything you can to improve your grip strength. You're going to need a lot of it. And of course, for your running, get out on the trails, because Spartan races are very technical, so trail running is going to be great practice.
So what are some of the things that you've learned about yourself doing the Spartan trifecta?
Well, you know, there was a time when running scared me, and then I became a runner. It doesn't scare me anymore. Then there was a time when running a half marathon was a frightening challenge. Then I ran a half, but I thought I would never do a full. That was unthinkable. Now I've done, at this present time, 14 marathons. So I've enjoyed the Spartan races because it's been an opportunity to run head first into something that is unknown and a little scary. Joe DeSena talks about obstacle immunity in life. And that's when you are so accustomed to pushing through obstacles and doing the hard thing over and over again that you don't trifle anymore over small things. You know, it's okay, for example, to take the stairs instead of the elevator. That's not hard. Or to have to go out and run on a cold day. Or to endure a terrible night's sleep. Or to grind out, you know, mind-numbing work on your computer or figure things out that you're working on. It's really allowed me to rethink what I call hard, quote-unquote, you know? What have I allowed myself to call hard in the past? I don't know, Angie, does that make any sense? Like, the things that we call hard, it's just all relative, right?
Yeah, and I think a lot of the irritations that we experience on a day-to-day basis are what we could call first-world problems.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
You know, it's those relatively trivial or minor problems or frustrations as contrast to those things that are experienced daily in the developing world. So like you were talking about, you know, many of our first world problems include not finding a close enough parking spot, you know, or standing in line at the post office, or not having Wi-Fi 24/7, or not having a Starbucks close by. You know, these are the things that people complain about. Maybe not having enough leg room on a flight or having a grumpy waiter or something like that, you know. So like you were saying, building up obstacle immunity can help you redefine those things that we might normally complain about and realize that, you know, those truly are not hard.
Yeah.
It's just all how you look at them.
And that's the beautiful thing about running marathons and other endurance challenges is you get a new appreciation for how easy most of our day-to-day lives are. Like you're saying, first world problems. And you kind of get a new perspective on what's truly hard because there's suffering that you choose and the suffering gives you a broader perspective. Nothing I endure can compare to things that other people have gone through, you know, and especially people like our next guest that we're going to have on now, Rob Jones. It was a great honor to speak with Rob Jones. He, at the time that we talked to him, was on day 28 of running 31 marathons in a row. Just a little bit about Rob's story. He was wounded by a landmine as a combat engineer with the Marine Corps in Afghanistan in 2010, and his injuries required double above-the-knee amputations. He went through rehab and was fitted with prosthetics at the Walter Reed Medical Center, where he learned how to stand, walk, run, ride a bicycle, and row. He trained for the 2010 Paralympics and got a bronze medal in rowing. In 2013, he did a solo self-supported transcontinental bike ride where he rode 5,200 miles across the U.S. in 181 days. His most recent accomplishment was running 31 marathons in 31 cities in 31 days to raise awareness and funds for wounded veteran charities. And like I said, we talked to him on day 28, so that's what you're going to hear. So I know you folks will love this conversation with Rob Jones. We're going to go ahead and play that for you right now. All right, we're on the podcast now with Rob Jones. Rob just finished his, I think it's 28th marathon today, right?
Yeah, number 28 today, man.
That's awesome, man. So how's your body holding up?
You know, up until today, it was actually holding up really well. But I took a spill yesterday on a very slick wooden bridge in Nashville. And so today, the entire run, my back was just, like, the left side of my lower back was just killing me. But the last mile there, it started to feel a little bit better. So I'm hoping by tomorrow it'll be okay. But I'm feeling pretty good overall.
We were reading that you rode your bike across the United States from Maine to California. How does what you're doing now compare to that endurance event?
I would say that the day-to-day is a little bit more taxing. I'm probably more tired after the marathon than I was riding my bike for 35 miles. But at the same time, you know, I'm almost done. So it's a lot shorter. So it's just 1 month, whereas the bike ride took six. So in that regard, it's a little bit easier mentally because, you know, once I'm kind of get going, it's almost time to finish.
Now, I've done two marathons in 2 days, and that was enough for me. So I have to say that I really admire what you're doing. And, you know, for our listeners who have never heard your story before, you're a double above-the-knee amputation, and that took place, was it back in 2010?
Yeah, July 22nd, 2010. I stepped on a landmine in Afghanistan, and that resulted in double above-knee amputations.
So I've been in marathons before and seen people running on prosthesis, but we've never talked to anyone, you know, who has to deal with something like that. You know, maybe go back to the beginning and tell us what it was like to go just through the basic recovery process. And I'm sure you had to learn to walk again and really learn to adjust to, you know, your body in a different way.
Yeah, you know, well, the first month I spent just healing, you know. Obviously, I had a lot of open wounds that needed to seal up and get revised. And so by the time 2010 came around, the doctors were incredibly skilled at, you know, putting whatever leg tissue was still there and setting them up so that they were ideal, kind of in an ideal state for wearing prosthetics.
Right.
They have, you know, the whatever procedures they do. I think for my right leg, they wrapped the quadricep around the bottom of what was left of my femur bone and then attached it on the other side. So it's like they're just really good at doing that. So I just had to wait for that stuff to heal. And then, so the first little bit there for a double above knee amputee, you actually spend on these really short legs. You get fitted for the socket by a prosthetist. The socket is kind of the part of the prosthetic that actually is molded to your leg and it goes onto your leg. And then all the devices and things are attached to that socket. So That's how everything's attached to your body. And so you get molded for that. And then I probably spent 4-ish months just on these little short legs that didn't have a bionic knee or anything. They're just a straight leg. And they were short. And yeah, so you just kind of take the time to re-strengthen the specific muscles you're going to need for walking in a new way. And then you kind of learn the basic balance. And then you also get your leg and your stump kind of hardened up to having pressure put on it in different spots. So obviously your leg isn't used to having, you know, it's not used to being in a prosthetic socket. So you kind of have to get used to that and get the skin used to that and the different pressure points adapted to that.
And I'm sure there's swelling in the beginning months too. So, you know, you're having to deal with the swelling going down, and it doesn't sound like a very comfortable process. Did you have like a vision at that point in time of, you know, being able to run again and do endurance events, or were you just kind of taking things step by step and just really focusing on your rehab at that point?
Yeah. You know, I think comfort in terms of prosthetics is, just making it as bearable as possible. It's not like
a relative term, huh?
Yeah, it's not, nobody would put a prosthetic socket on in order to be comfortable. You know, it's not like the same thing as putting on your slippers and like, ooh, that's a nice feeling.
Right.
But if you have a good prosthetist, you can get it to a point where it's pretty comfortable. It's just a matter of managing and minimizing discomfort, I think, really. And then what was the second part of the question?
I was just wondering, you know, as you're going through your rehab process, if you had a vision of, you know, doing endurance events, or, you know, I'm sure there was just a lot of, you know, struggle in your mind as you're readjusting to what life is going to look like. You know, did you have a vision of what the future would be like, or were you just trying to take it one day at a time and give it your all that day?
Yeah, you know, a little bit of both. I was primarily focused on regaining independence, right, making sure I could be self-sufficient. So that was kind of my first objective during my recovery, which involved, you know, learning how to walk, learning how to get up if I fell down, and getting really good at using the prosthetic so I could go anywhere I wanted to. And then kind of once I got the hang of that, that's when I started really focusing on, you know, just the same exact stuff that anybody else focuses on. You know, I wanted to try a sport just like anybody else. So right. I learned how to run. So I started running. I learned how to row and I started rowing. So I eventually got to a point where I could say I started doing quote unquote normal stuff where, you know, it's not centered around rehab, but more centered around just finding a new hobby and going for it.
And it sounds like, I mean, some of the things that you've pursued, getting up to the caliber that you did with your rowing and getting a bronze medal in the Paralympics. I mean, it sounds like you're a pretty goal-oriented, driven person because, you know, that's not exactly like something someone does for a hobby. You don't get to that level by just, you know, rowing a few times a week for fun.
Yeah, no, you have to decide that you're going for it at the highest level. But it's good to have, you know, when you have an injury like that, I didn't know this at the time, but I think it's important to have a goal or something that you're shooting for in mind, because then it's like, it's kind of, you know, you can gear everything you're doing towards that. And so, and otherwise, if you don't have something that you're working towards specifically, then, you know, everything you're doing is kind of just aimless almost. And so it might work, but it's not going to be as good because you don't really have something that you're working towards. Mm-hmm. Like if you're trying to drive from DC to New York, you know where you're going. So you just go straight up 95. Whereas if you just, well, I just want to go north, then, you know, you're going to be going on all sorts of different roads and you don't know where you're going to end up specifically.
Exactly. So explain, share the story of how you came up with the Rob Jones Journey goal of running 31 consecutive marathons.
Well, you know, I'm a member of the veteran community, and more specifically the wounded veteran community. And I saw a trend of wounded veterans being looked at, specifically veterans with mental or psychological injuries. I saw a trend of people looking at them and seeing a broken person or a broken veteran or a person that was now incapable of handling themselves and not really being able to contribute to society or their families. And so, and I know that that's not true. I know that in most cases, that's not the case. Yeah. So I wanted to try and combat that trend, that belief that seemed to be pervading with my own example. So I set out to you know, just provide a story and an example of a veteran that went to Afghanistan and had a traumatic experience and was able to come back and, you know, reintegrate and find a new path. And so I just wanted to get that story out there, not because I'm trying to say that, you know, the story of a wounded veteran that does struggle is not a valid story. It's an extremely important story that needs to be told. But I just wanted to have both sides of the coin out there so that a veteran that may be struggling can see that it is possible for them to do it. And then also for the civilians, you know, I just wanted them to have a greater understanding of, you know, both sides of what it means to be a wounded veteran.
I appreciate that. And what's the reception been like?
Oh, man, just all positive, just incredible. Like, I just finished in Atlanta today. I think I'd say I had at least 50 people run with me. I don't, maybe even more, maybe even 75 people throughout the day that came out and ran. That's along awesome. With, or just came over and just, you know, wanted to be a part of it and just show their support. And, you know, I've gotten support from total strangers, from, you know, veterans that are saying, you know, we love that you're doing this. We love that you're representing us in this way. And, you know, that's the greatest compliment I could receive. And it just reaffirms, you know, that I'm doing the right thing.
That's awesome. I saw, I think on your Instagram today, a picture of the crowd that was with you there in Atlanta. That's great. And also, it looks like you've been in the news and in various local news.
Yeah, we're getting lots of, most places we get, unless there's something, some kind of breaking news that pulls the crews off, we're usually getting at least three or four of the major local stations that come out and cover us. So it's been awesome. And we've gotten a couple, you know, national media outlets to cover us. So yeah, the word is getting out there and it's been great.
So what are you doing in between your marathon distance to recover? I mean, I'm sure it's pretty grueling on your body to, you know, go that far and then have to get in the car and drive to your next location.
Well, we have an RV.
Okay.
So basically what I'm doing right now is just laying down in bed with my legs propped up.
Get the weight off.
And, you know, yeah, exactly. And, you know, I'll eat, obviously, and I will try and tend to any little injuries I might have, like my back, you know, that thing. My mom is a massage therapist and she's along, so she'll be giving me, she gives me a massage or two massages every day, and just works on keeping that stuff nice and loose and recovered. And if I have any skin breakdown that I need to take care of, I'll put some cream on there or something, or try and recover that as much as possible.
Maybe you can just elaborate on that for a minute, because I also saw a video on your Instagram where you were showing some of the sores, raw spots that are rubbed.
Yeah, we call it skin breakdown. If I was going to go run one marathon, I probably wouldn't have all this stuff, all this kind of skin breakdown. But I think it's just the repeated over and over stuff. So no matter what, you know how I was talking earlier about how you pretty much just try and get it as comfortable as possible, but you're never going to get it to a point where you put the leg on and you say, ooh, that feels great. You know, it's not satisfying to have it on. It's like, no. Oh, that's not too bad. So, you know, no matter how comfortable your leg is, you're never going to reduce all the friction of running just because it's an imperfect connection. You know, It's like I have a sleeve on and it holds it on pretty well, but there's always going to be that little bit of movement. So I minimize that as much as I can with, you know, chamois creams and just getting the socket as, you know, comfortably tight as I can get it. But there's always going to be that little bit of movement. So that from that, that produces like little pimples sometimes or little blood blisters. Or the video that you saw, there was just a big pouch of fluid, like a saddle sore, kind of like a saddle sore. That was just on the corner of my leg. And yeah, so it's just stuff like that. And then when I first started, I had some abrasions, but I healed those up. And yeah, so it's just that kind of thing that I'm dealing with. And so, you know, in between, I'll put some healing cream on there and I'll just, you know, try and treat those as much as I can. But there's not a whole lot you can do. They just need time to heal.
And most people would not go out and do another marathon the next day.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, if I was just sitting at home, they'd heal up in, you know, a few days. But I think because I'm going out there and doing this every single day, you know, it's taking them a little bit longer.
So is it pretty much now pain with every step?
It's discomfort with every step. Not to the point that I would be, you know, wincing physically or
sure.
You won't see it on my face or anything. But it's pretty much the exact same thing as having a blister, running with a blister, you know. If you had a blister on your toe, it's like, you know, it hurts, but it's not slowing you down. You'll still be able to run at the same pace. But if it got bad enough or big enough, then yeah, it might slow you down a little bit.
So are you one of those people with a high pain tolerance?
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. I'd have to see somebody who had the highest pain tolerance and then, you know, see what they're able to tolerate and go back from there. Like, I don't think I could do, I think I read Scott Jurek's book and he like strained his ankle or something during a 100-mile race and then was able to finish it. I don't know if I could do anything like that, but I might be a little bit higher than some.
I'm sure it's all relative. You've probably built up a higher pain tolerance over the years just having to deal with that traumatic injury. So
it's possible, yeah. So I don't know. I might have a little bit higher than the average person, but when it comes to like really people that can really suffer, I don't know.
And the reason why I asked, because I was wondering if you had any tools or techniques that you use to sort things out in your mind to keep pushing yourself, even though you're dealing with discomfort.
You know what it is for me is just having a purpose. That's greater than myself. You know, I'm out here doing this for my brother veterans.
Yeah.
And when it boils right down to it, whether my back hurts or I have a blister on my leg, is so much less important than the mission itself. So, it's worth it. But then you can also think about how, like I was thinking today about, you know, people like the Bataan Death March or, you know, really, really, you know, tragic circumstances or people in POW camps that were really suffering. And I'm sitting there going like, you know, this probably is nothing in comparison, but that doesn't mean it hurts less.
Yeah. Right.
I often think about that too. Are there any like particular individuals or stories that come to mind when you think about people that have endured that kind of suffering that puts in perspective for you?
Oh man. I mean, you read any book about like a military route or something. And you know, it's just like people being marched for miles and miles and miles, or just people being taken prisoner and just being forced to walk until they're about dead, you know, then being sent into prisoner camps where they're, you know, tortured or whatever, you know. So it's,
yeah,
any story like that, I mean, is just any kind of marathon pain that you could feel just fails in comparison.
Right. At least with a marathon, you know, after 26.2 miles, it's going to be over for that day. And then you can regroup and check in with your support system and everything. Whereas people who are forced to in these extreme conditions don't have any of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And they don't even know when it's going to end. I mean,
it's a psychological, you know, torture. Yeah.
And then there's like stuff like Chosin Reservoir and the Korean War, you know, it was like minus 30 degrees and they were fighting for their lives against 10 Chinese divisions and they had to break their way out and march down while people are shooting at them. And, you know, it's just anything like that, you know, it just really puts it into perspective. But like I said, that doesn't make my leg hurt any less, but it kind of, I'm able to maybe get a little bit extra there just, you know, by realizing that this isn't the worst thing in the world.
That's right. How did you train for this, or did you train for this? I mean, how did you prepare yourself to run the marathon distance back to back? Because if you look at your running gait, it's different. You know, you have a lot more hip action. I'm sure you have to use your core muscles and your back a lot more. How did you work to get yourself strengthened for that?
Well, you know, it's pretty much the same. Like if you guys were going to go and try and do this, it'd be the same exact training plan, basically, you know. You just go out and you run, and whatever muscles you're using, you run. Those are the ones that you need to strengthen. Whatever connective tissue needs to be strengthened, you're going to be strengthening those by your own gait. So the fact that my gait is a little bit different doesn't mean that I'm going to train any differently, so to speak. What I did was I trained for a year and a half for this specifically. And then, you know, I have a long training history, you know, so I've been doing sports ever. We can say maybe it reset after my injury. And then even then, it's like, you know, 6 years of training history. So I've been doing stuff. And then so this is kind of added on to it. And I trained with the Maffetone method.
Yes.
So I just go for long runs on that. And now when I'm doing this, all these marathons, I keep my heart rate under 150. And you know what? It's been working great.
Yeah, it'll really help you recover more quickly.
Yeah, or just not produce all the byproducts and extra damage that I don't need. And I'm not really trying to PB any of these marathons. So just taking my time with it, trying to prevent the breakdown before it happens as opposed to cause it and then recover from it.
So what's your average time been?
About 4 hours of actual running time. So I'll do a 12-kilometer loop, take 20-minute break, repeat that, and then I'll do 2 9-kilometer loops with 20-minute break in between. So I'll have about an hour's worth of break, and then it'll be about 4 hours of running. So all said and done, 5 hours.
That's great.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I'm happy with it. It got to a point in the early stages where I was actually getting faster and faster. So my fastest marathon was actually 3:50 in Chicago. And yeah, so I was like getting pretty excited about that. But then it kind of plateaued around there. So I'll do something a little bit less than 4 hours if conditions are right.
So have you ever had a point during the 28 days so far that you've thought, after this is over, I never want to run another marathon or never want to run again?
Today was probably one of those days because of my back.
Yes.
But maybe in Houston where it was so super hot and humid. I've never gotten to a point where I'm saying I'm never going to run again. Like I'm not going to finish my last marathon and then throw my running legs into the Potomac River.
That's good to know.
You know, but I've definitely gotten to a point where I'm sitting there going, you know, what is the point of running another like big city marathon? Because I've kind of spoiled myself in that I wake up and I just start running and I go run a marathon. Whereas like the big city marathons, you kind of have to wake up at 4 o'clock in order to start at 9 o'clock.
Yeah.
It's all the logistics.
Get on the shuttle and it's just,
it's a marathon to get to the marathon.
Yeah, exactly. You gotta like do your own marathon to get there. So I've kind of spoiled myself. So I'm thinking, wow, maybe I don't need to do those anymore.
How many marathons did you do before you started this challenge?
I just did two. I did two Marine Corps marathons, 2015, 2016.
Awesome.
And then during the training for this, just on my own, I probably did another 20.
Yeah, I bet. A lot of time.
I would do training blocks where I do, or test blocks. So I train for about 6 weeks, and then I do two marathons, and then three marathons, and I work my way up to five marathons. And then for the last 12 weeks, I was probably running a marathon every Thursday just to kind of get used to the distance and make the distance kind of seem not that big of a deal.
I did have one more question. If we could circle back to this idea of having a purpose,
yeah,
and a mission for just the everyday runner who's going to do a marathon. Let's say that they're not going to be raising money for a charity. They're just going to commit to signing up for a race and doing it. You think it helps that they formulate some sort of personal mission to get them through, you know, the rough times in their training and through the marathon? I mean, could you speak to that?
I think that's the best way to get the most out of yourself. I mean, I don't think that you have to have a mission beyond self-improvement in order to do a marathon. I mean, you don't Sure. even have to have a mission in order to do a marathon, I don't think. But if you want to get the best out of yourself, like, do you think you'd run a marathon faster if you just, you know, woke up one day and said, well, I just feel like running a marathon today? Or do you think you'd run a marathon faster if some cartel kidnapped your child and said you had to run a marathon in under 3 hours right. in order to save their life? You know, like, you have that mission that's definitely going to get the best out of you, but you don't necessarily have to have it. And yeah, it's kind of, it can be a little bit difficult to find a mission beyond just, you know, I just want to improve myself and see what I'm capable of. And that is enough.
And there's, but, yeah, there's nothing wrong with that, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, that's a great mission to have. But not every mission has to be like mine where I'm, you know, fighting for veterans' issues. But I think having a mission that you can make yourself answerable to is definitely going to get the best out of you.
Yeah. Well, I think you're setting a great example of not only becoming a better version of yourself, but also inspiring people and, you know, helping support these veterans' causes. So, you know, great job. We're really impressed and look forward to seeing how you finish strong in DC.
Yeah, definitely.
Thanks a lot. You know, you guys are really helping me with that by having me on the podcast and helping me get my story out there. So, you know, thanks to you guys for helping me.
Right on. It's been an honor to talk to you, Rob. Keep up the great work.
You guys, thanks a lot for having me on. I appreciate it.
All right. Hope your rest and recovery goes well for
thanks, man.
Your next three marathons.
Safe travels.
Thanks.
All right. Talk to you later.
Bye-bye.
All right. Well, hope you enjoyed that conversation with Rob Jones. On November 11th, 2017, he finished his 31st marathon on Veterans Day, and that was 812 miles total. He finished in Washington, D.C., and raised, it sounds like, over $150,000 for charities like Tunnel to Towers Foundation, the Coalition to Salute America's Heroes, and the Injured Marine Semper Fi Fund. And of course, you can find out more about Rob and see videos from his journey at robjonesjourney.com. And we'll also have some videos on our website along with show notes to this episode. Well, now we want to talk about some tough races around the world that'll just put the word hard in perspective when you're out there running your marathon, because maybe you haven't taken on an incredible challenge like what Rob has done, or maybe you're not close to doing any of these races, you know, in the near future. But just knowing that they exist and knowing what other people are going through has always been inspiring to me. Like, you know, I think to myself, you know, wow, if Rob, as a double amputee, can run 31 marathons in 31 days and just endure all the rehab and everything that he's gone through, I can get through this marathon. Do you ever do that, Angie? Sort of think about what other people have gone through and just put your suffering in perspective?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I think channeling some of those heroes of ours who really face incredible challenges day to day can be incredibly motivating and put our chosen suffering into perspective. And I think one of the benefits of challenging yourself, however that takes form for you, is that through that chosen discomfort, you can build better resilience to face the pain that we don't choose and that we can't control.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, we all know life is full of pain. You only have to watch the news for about 5 minutes to realize that, you know, there's people around the world who have it incredibly hard. But I really think that marathon training gives us a broader framework to experience the world. And, you know, if you're at the point in your fitness where you don't find the marathon hard anymore, then there are always lots of other hard endurance races to choose from, like we're going to talk about. And I have to be honest, you know, most of these hard endurance races we're going to talk about, they do not appeal to me at all. And it's okay, you know, if you don't have to feel like you're less of a runner or less of a tough person if you don't have a desire to do these type of things. You know, what's going to be challenging to you is going to be different than what's challenging to someone else. So we don't want to make anyone feel like they're less of an athlete or less of a runner or less tough because, you know, they're not traversing the Arctic or whatever, you know. But I think, like you said, it is really cool to see that some of the challenges that are out there, and it can help us put whatever we're going through right now into perspective.
I'm tempted to do one of these just so that subsequent road marathons will seem easier.
I'm going to pick one for you with lots of cold water.
So we've got a list of tough endurance races around the world that fit this description. Before we give you that, we'd like to say a quick word of thanks to this episode's sponsor, Health IQ. Health IQ believes that people who work out and eat healthy shouldn't have to pay as much for life insurance. So they've used data and science to negotiate lower rates on life insurance with A-plus insurance carriers, and they've secured over $5.3 billion in coverage for customers so far. In fact, they were just featured this week at the time of this recording in Forbes, Wall Street Journal, CNBC, and TechCrunch in the San Diego Union-Tribune because the company's just taken off and started with their founder, basically, I think he's an ex-Googler or ex-Google employee, noticing how people who are otherwise healthy would be penalized on life insurance if they had like an adverse health history in their family, even though they themselves were healthy.
Right. And other insurance carriers are often going to be cautious about things that are often unique to runners, like a slow resting heart rate. And they're the only life insurance company that caters to marathoners. So you can head over to healthiq.com/MTA to get a free rate quote, and you can see what they can do for you. That's healthiq.com/MTA.
And we'd also like to thank Molecule for sponsoring this episode. Imagine if your phone was the same as it was in the 1940s. Well, that is exactly when the technology you were using to clean your air was developed, with the invention of the HEPA filter. Thankfully, Molecule has introduced a breakthrough science that is finally capable of destroying air pollutants at a molecular level.
In fact, Molecule's technology goes beyond HEPA filtration. It captures and completely destroys the full spectrum of indoor air pollutants, including those 1,000 times smaller than what a HEPA filter can catch. In a study of 49 allergy sufferers presented at the American College of Asthma, Allergy, and Immunology, Molecule's technology provided dramatic, statistically significant symptom reduction within a week of use. One customer even said she was able to breathe through her nose for the first time in 15 years.
That's right. Molecule has already helped allergy and asthma sufferers around the country. And as a listener to this podcast, you can save $75 off your first order. Just visit molecule.com. That's MOLEKULE.com. And enter the promo code MTA at checkout. Once again, that's molecule.com and use the code MTA. All right, Angie. So if one was wanting to broaden the definition of what is hard when it comes to running and redefine that word, what are some races that we could truly call hard?
Well, it's actually researching that. And I mean, there, what we're going to talk about is just going to scratch the surface of the endurance events out there that to me seem truly challenging and somewhat terrifying. Some of them I'd never heard of before. So I thought it was really cool. You know, maybe there'll be some that our listeners haven't been exposed to before either.
Yeah. And just to clarify, I mean, for me, at this point in my running, a marathon is still very challenging. I mean, it's a torture fest to get through that last 10K. So I am nowhere near ready to jump into any one of these. But just knowing they're there is cool, you know?
Yes. People out there are doing them and surviving to tell about it.
Exactly.
So here's a list. And the first one I have on it is called the Marathon du Sable. It's in the Sahara Desert in Morocco. It's a 150 to 156 mile stage race, which is split over 6 days through the blistering desert. And you have to carry all your supplies with you. The race does provide your tent, accommodations, and water. But other than that, you have to carry everything you need on your back.
We've actually had a couple guests on the show in years past who've done this. Lisa Smith-Batchen won it back in the day. And also, I remember Ian Sharman, the ultra runner. I asked him, you know, how did you get into running marathons and ultras? He says he was just this dude living in London who heard about the Marathon du Sable and signed up. So I'm like, wait, you didn't do a marathon first? He's like, nope.
Wow. The second one on the list is called the Hard Rock 100. It's in Silverton, Colorado. It has a 48-hour time limit. It goes through the San Juan Mountains. And it has 33,000 feet of ascent, with the highest point of elevation being 14,000 feet. And it also has 33,000 feet of descent through tough terrain.
It is probably the toughest 100-miler here in the States, from what I've read. And it'll take even the best ultra runners and just, like, pulverize them.
Right.
A lot of interesting folks that do this race, though. I mean, remember the one year the guy got hit by lightning and still finished the race?
Yeah, it's pretty gnarly. The third one is the Everest Marathon. This starts at Mount Everest Base Camp. So participants are actually required to spend 3 weeks in Nepal prior to get acclimatized to the elevation, which starts at 18,000 feet.
Oh, my.
And it finishes down the mountain at 11,300 feet in very cold conditions. Yeah, so I mean, you know, this is a serious time commitment because you're going to be spending a good 3+ weeks.
Yeah.
In preparation for this. It's pretty crazy.
Well, that is one I had never heard of, Angie. Thank you.
Yeah. The fourth one is the Barkley Marathons in Tennessee. In the first place, this one is very hard to get an entry into. It's a 100+ mile course, has over 120,000 feet of climbing. You have to navigate it yourself and finish in less than 60 hours. Only 15 people have finished in the race's 30-year history. I wouldn't be one of them. I'm sorry. I just don't call it low self-esteem. It's just reality.
Yeah, they call it the race that eats its young.
The navigation part would be what gets me, among other things.
I know. Yeah, that'd be frustrating because you can be in tip-top shape, but just get out there and get lost, and your race is gone.
Exactly. The fifth one is the Ultra Trail du Mont Blanc in France. It's a 106-mile course which loops through France, Italy, and Switzerland through tough and gorgeous mountains. The sixth one is the Patagonian Expedition Race. This is in Chile, and it's a team event that has different courses of 375 to 500 miles every year. It requires navigation and survival skills, as well as rock climbing and sea kayaking within a 10-day period. And the race course is not announced until 24 hours prior to the event.
Oh, man.
Another one I can confidently mark off my list of ever wanting to do.
Yeah, the navigation part would throw you off, Angie, I think.
It would. The seventh one is the Self-Transcendence 3100-mile ultra race. It's in New York City. It's the longest certified road race, and runners start at 6 a.m. and run through midnight for 52 days in a row. It happens during the summer. So speaking of monotony.
Yeah, so until you get to 3100 miles.
Exactly. So it's basically just the same loop over and over.
I remember Joe DeSena, when we had him on the show, I asked him, you know, what gave you this inspiration to become an endurance athlete and to start an obstacle course race? And he grew up, I think, in Queens and was familiar with this self-transcendence race. And he didn't,
wow.
He's never done it, but just knowing that there's people that are doing that kind of opened up his mind at a young age.
Yeah, definitely. The eighth one on the list is the Badwater 135, which of course we've talked a lot about on the podcast in the past. It is in Death Valley, California. It starts at the lowest part of Death Valley in July and finishes at the end of the road on Mount Whitney. So it has over 14,600 feet of ascent, 6,000 feet of descent, and extremely hot conditions. And of course, as you get closer to Mount Whitney, extremely cold conditions too. The ninth one is the Pikes Peak Marathon in Manitou Springs, Colorado. It starts at 6,300 feet. It winds along a narrow trail up to 14,115 feet on the top of Pikes Peak. And then you have to turn around and make the descent down. So it gets you on the way up and the way down. And there was also cutoffs to this one. So they'll pull you off the mountain if you don't meet certain cutoffs at certain times. The 10th one is called the Munga. It takes place in Belfast, South Africa. It goes along the Munga Trail, where you have 120 hours to navigate around 400K or 250 miles. So another one of those where you're basically navigating through the jungle, hoping that you
what could happen?
Survive.
Yeah. What could go wrong?
Exactly. The 11th one is the Iditarod Trail Invitational in Alaska. So you can either run, fat bike, or ski the 1,000-mile course. Only about 58 individuals have finished since the event was started in the year 2000.
1,000 miles.
Yes,
and that's
freezing
nuts.
Cold. The 12th one is the Jungle Marathon in the Amazon Jungle, Brazil. It's called the world's wildest eco race. It traverses jungles and swamps through 100 degree plus heat and humidity. They offer a marathon, a 4-stage 80-mile ultra, and a 6-stage 158-mile ultra. So something for everyone. I'm imagining a lot of bug bites.
Yes. Likelihood of dying extremely high. That's my commentary on that one.
The 13th one is the Spartathlon in Athens, Greece. It's 150 miles plus along the route that Pheidippides ran from Athens to Sparta. And of course, Dean Karnazes talks a lot about this in his book, Road to Sparta. And we had him on the podcast
earlier this year.
Yeah. So very, very interesting historical race. And then I have a few honorable mentions here that talk about real quick. Of course, there's the Western States 100-miler in California. There's the Eastern States 100-miler in Pennsylvania. Leadville Trail 100 in Colorado. There's the Hurt 100 in Hawaii. There's the Bob Graham Round in the UK. It basically hits 42 peaks in the Lake District. There's the Dragon's Back Race in Wales. It's 5-day, 188 miles. Total climbs double the height of Mount Everest, so that's over 56,000 feet. There's the Grand to Grand Ultra. It starts in the Grand Canyon in Arizona, and it goes to the summit of the Grand Staircase in the state of Utah. It is self-supported, 170 miles in 7 days. It makes me thirsty just thinking about that. There is what's called the 6693 Ultra. You basically choose 120 or 350 miles across the Arctic Circle. It's described as the coldest, toughest, and windiest race. And then there's the Ultra Trail Mount Fuji in Japan. It's 105 miles in 46 hours. And then there's the Plain 100 in the state of Washington. It is anywhere from 100 to 112 miles in 36 hours, totally self-supported. So no nice aid stations, no people cheering you on, which makes anything harder.
That's a low-budget race, you know. Just, hey, you're going to run 100 miles. I'm not going to give you anything except maybe your name on our website.
Right. The bragging rights that you've done it. So obviously, if you have no desire to take on one of these previously mentioned endurance challenges, you're probably not alone. And like we mentioned earlier, everyone's on an individual journey. And trying to keep up with or outdo other people is not where it's at. It's just about finding challenges that connect with who you are as a person and with what goals that really resonate with your life. So I think that's where it's at.
All right, Angie, life or death, you have to choose one of these races and complete it.
Probably the Pikes Peak Marathon.
Because you've actually looked at that before.
I have, yeah. I mean, it would be challenging, but I think I could do it.
Oh, I think you could. And you could probably do the Pikes Peak double, which is the day before you do an ascent, I think, right? And then you do the full marathon the next.
Right. I think I just stick with the one. Thank you. How about you?
Well, it's hard for me because I want to visit all of these amazing places just to say I've been there. The running part, you know, I would just have to get through. I can imagine just what an adventure these races would be. I mean, the Spartathlon, running in the footsteps of Pheidippides Also, I would love to visit Morocco and do the Marathon de Sable. Something that didn't make the list, but there's these four deserts challenges. And you know, we've had folks on the show, like Academy member named Ryan, who we interviewed, I think, last year. He did the Atacama Desert Crossing in Chile, the driest desert in the world, which is also kind of a self-supported stage race. But strangely, that race has an appeal to me. Yeah, I could see myself doing it.
That's because you think there's no cold water involved. Driest desert in the world, right?
That is true.
Well, I think the point is, you know, there's also so much inspiration that we can gain by looking at the lives of people who are experiencing hard things, like Rob Jones, who we talked to. Recently, MTA member Sherry posted a video in our private Facebook group of the story of Glenn Cunningham. And this story goes way back to 1917, where he was severely burned in a schoolhouse fire when he was a young boy and his brother was actually killed. And the doctors wanted to amputate his badly damaged legs, but his parents refused and worked hard on his rehab. And it actually took him 2 years before he was able to learn to walk. And because walking was so painful, he actually found that running was more comfortable. So as a boy, he ran everywhere. And Glenn went on to break the world record in the mile with a time of 4 minutes and 6 seconds in 1934. And then he also set a record for the 800 meter and indoor mile. He competed in the 1932 and 1936 Summer Olympics. And his ultimate goal was to do a 4 minute mile. He never did achieve that. He got close with a 404. Glenn Cunningham was known for his determination and his positive attitude. And his favorite Bible verse was Isaiah 40:31. It says, "But those who wait on the Lord shall renew their strength. They shall mount up with wings like eagles. They shall run and not be weary. They shall walk and not faint."
They shall run and not be weary. I love that part.
That's right. And if you have to walk, don't faint. Later in life, Glenn and his wife opened a youth ranch in Kansas where they helped 10,000 needy and abused children. So people who have often suffered so much go on to really make a huge impact in the world.
That is true. And I did not know all that about Glenn Cunningham. So, Angie, thank you.
Yeah. Thank you, Sherry.
I should say, yeah. Thank you, Sherry. Well, that brings us to the end of this episode. Keep pushing yourself to do the hard thing and building up your immunity to obstacles. And maybe next year you just need to sign up for something that scares you a little.
That's right. And, you know, we're all going to have hard days, but if we can keep a heart of gratitude, it really helps us get through the hard times and makes life so much better.
Well, if you enjoy this podcast, we'd love for you to share it with a friend or a fellow runner. I know with the new iOS update for iPhones, you can go into your podcast app and there's actually a feature that lets you share. So just find our podcast in there and then click on it and you'll see a little button that will enable you to send it to a friend. And thank you, Apple, for that kind gift to the podcasting world.
Yeah, very cool.
So yeah, our show actually has been growing lately. And of course, our Facebook page too. We're over 14,000 likes now.
Yeah, we really are thankful for the MTA community. You guys are the reason that we're doing this. And, you know, you give us a reason to be thankful. And we always appreciate when you connect with us on social media or send us an email or leave us a positive review. All those things are greatly appreciated.
Angie's in a very thankful mood because tomorrow is Thanksgiving.
Aren't I always thankful?
Yeah. You are. You are. It's a good way to live. Well, until next time, folks, keep taking action toward your goals. And remember, you have what it takes to run a marathon and change your life. Well on my way, well on my way. Bum 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 b